life. It's now 1883, and following the deaths of her mother and her elder sister, Jenny Chen, Eleanor is mourning her father. Despite her grief, she continues to teach at a girls' school, sort out her father's papers, and keep up her unpaid work as a socialist activist. However, her private life preoccupies her most after the social reformer Beatrice Potter invites her to tea. Tracy Ann Oberman reads.
In the early 1880s, Eleanor gathered around her a cast of remarkable people who took centre stage in her life after her father's death. Her theatre was the British Museum Reading Room. It was here that Eleanor and her Victorian Bloomsbury group worked, flirted, and subverted. Eleanor was easily recognisable. Her trademark pince-nez were clipped to a long pinchbeck chain, and her curls tumbled loosely and thickly to her waist. Eleanor's attempts to pin them back were perfunctory, and she shed pins on the desks and in the catalogues. Beatrice Potter recognised her immediately, as she recorded in her diary on the 24th of May, 1883. In person, she is dressed in a slovenly, picturesque way, with fine eyes full of life and sympathy, and a complexion showing signs of unhealthy, excited life. Beatrice Potter was one of Eleanor's many passing acquaintances. She suggested tea in the refreshment room, curious to hear Eleanor's views on British secularist and journal editor George Foote's recent prosecution for blasphemous libel. A fellow secularist campaigner called Edward Aveling was appointed acting editor during Foote's imprisonment. Aveling robustly defended the right to blaspheme. He started using the British Museum Reading Room in 1882. It was here that he introduced himself to Eleanor. Aveling was well-versed in the opportunities provided for flirtation and liaison in this studious space. He wrote a comic article on the humours of the reading room, playfully recommending that sexual segregation would achieve less talking and fewer marriages. A spine injury caused by a childhood accident gave Edward a slight stoop that contributed to his reptilian air. Sickliness resulting from this confined him to home for many of his early years, where he had the run of his father's excellent library. He went on to study medicine, but whilst a student, he married Isabel Frank, known to all as Belle, daughter of a chicken farmer who came with a handsome dowry. The marriage didn't last long. Edward claimed to some that the adulterous Belle ran off with a priest. Edward's younger brother, Frederick, provided a different account. Edward had married Belle for her money. When not able to get any more out of her, he left her. Around the time they separated, Aveling was also rumoured to have had a series of sexual dalliances with his female students. British secularism emerged as an organised movement in the mid-19th century. And as a scientist, Aveling became passionately committed to the new cause. He also believed in the importance of free, secular education, and in 1882 stood for the London School Board elections. Edward was well on the road to socialism, and it's easy to see why his anti-establishment and anti-religious turn of mind appealed to Eleanor. Aveling suggested that Eleanor might like to write some articles for him. To the satisfaction of both, the commission provided ample pretext for them to spend time together in the reading room and around its Bloomsbury precincts. In September, Eleanor went to Eastbourne on holiday with Engels and Lenchen. Lenchen was in a funk of grief following the death of Karl Marx and exhausted from the labour of sorting out the family home. Eleanor spoke about Edward frequently, and he came to visit her in Eastbourne, causing amused and meaningful looks between Engels and Lenchen. After the holiday, the house at Maitland Park Road was broken up, and Eleanor went to live on her own for the first time in the heart of Bloomsbury. With lots of books, a box of crockery, and a few bits of furniture from the family house, Lenchen went to live at Regent's Park Road as Engels' housekeeper. Her son, Freddie, began to visit her regularly for the first time. Freddie Demut, born in Soho in 1851, grew up in foster care with minimal education. He grasped the limited opportunities available to him and served an engineering apprenticeship. Eleanor and Freddie had known each other for some time, and correspondence between Eleanor's elder sisters make it clear that they were also involved in Freddie's life. All three sisters believed they were supporting Engel's undeclared son, conceived with Lenchen in the old Soho days. Eleanor was shocked by Engel's indifferent, aloof attitude towards Freddie. Usually warm and genial, when Freddie visited, he went out or hid in his study. Interwoven with Eleanor's move into a prominent position in socialist organization was her growing engagement with political feminism. Crucial to this was her new friendship with the South African writer Olive Schreiner. Olive was an immediate, like-minded contemporary with a heavy South African accent and, like Eleanor, a German father. Eleanor and Olive were like magnets. They spent time together every day that they were in the reading room, and within a year of meeting, were intimate friends and political allies. In 1884, when she was 29, the question of free love came into the foreground of Eleanor's life. She wrote to her sister, Laura. "You must have known for some time that I am very fond of Edward Aveling, and he says he is fond of me, so we are going to set up together." By July, Eleanor and Edward had found rooms to rent at 55 Great Russell Street, directly opposite the British Museum. Eleanor told her sister they were going to Derbyshire in the middle of July by way of a honeymoon. She wrote, "Don't misunderstand him. If you knew what his position is, I know you would not." Edward's position was that he was a married man, separated from his difficult wife, Belle, who refused to agree to a divorce because of her religious beliefs. Eleanor put the case openly to her friends. She wrote to her friend Dolly, now Mrs. Radford, since she had married conventionally. "I am going to live with Edward Aveling as his wife. You know he is married, and that I cannot be his wife legally, but it will be a true marriage to me, just as much as if a dozen registrars had officiated. I shall quite understand if you think the position one you cannot accept." Eleanor was justly anxious about how her decision might affect her reputation. Her father and Engels had theorised about the emancipation of women and the possible future forms of free love. They made some significant experiments with these ideas in their personal lives, but, as Victorian patriarchs, were largely immune from criticism. Eleanor's historical role was to put free love to the practical test of experience. The woman question was, in fact, a multiplicity of questions. How should free thinkers, atheists and socialists measure their new ways of living against principle? How could equality be achieved in the workplace and the home? On the morning of the 8th of July, 1884, Eleanor and Edward left London by train for Derbyshire and booked into the Nelson Arms in the village of Middleton as Mr. and Mrs. Marks Aveling. Eleanor had suggested to Olive Schreiner that she and her lover, Henry Havelock Ellis, join them on a joint honeymoon. Olive had already arrived and was staying a mile away at a farmhouse. Henry was due a week later. Olive expected to see Eleanor joyous and ebullient at the brand new beginning of her marriage. However, on the first day, she wrote to Henry, "She is now to be called Mrs. Aveling. I was glad to see her face. I love her, but she looks so miserable." By the following week, Olive's observations had hardened into an unshakable dislike for Edward. "I am beginning to have such a horror of Aveling. To say I dislike him doesn't express it at all. He is so selfish, but that doesn't account for the feeling of dread." Olive was sceptical of Edward's reasons for not marrying Eleanor. She tried to caution her, as did Edward's own brother Frederick, but at this preliminary stage of love-struck infatuation, Eleanor paid no heed. Less than a year after their Derbyshire honeymoon, Eleanor confided to Olive her realisation of her illusions about Edward. She wrote, "Edward is dining out and went off in the highest of spirits because several ladies are to be there. The solitude is more than I can bear. The constant effort not to break down is intolerable." Her friends, uncomfortable around Edward, or just downright disliking him, began to avoid their social invitations. To Eleanor's delight, Laura came to visit in October 1884, for the first time since their father's death. Eleanor enjoyed introducing her sophisticated French political sister to her new circle. Laura liked Olive Schreiner. She reserved her views on Edward. She observed that alongside her unpaid activism, Eleanor was working harder than ever, writing, researching, teaching and translating. Whilst Eleanor grafted, Edward was embroiled in public allegations of financial mismanagement of the National Secular Society. It was alleged that Aveling, as vice president, had made personal use of campaign funds and not repaid them. In March 1884, Edward was diagnosed with kidney stones and by April was seriously ill. He retreated to the Isle of Wight with an accumulating trail of complaints about the financial management of any project he touched. Eleanor confided to Olive that she now accepted Edward's dalliances. To family and friends, she emphasised Edward's ill health, whilst working furiously to try and pay off his outstanding debts. She seemed tireless. Her correspondence from 1885 onwards is like an administrative machine, each missive fueling her steam engine of activism. Between the summers of 1885 and 1886, among other things, Eleanor started and finished the first English translation of Gustave Flaubert's Madame Bovary, revised a new edition of Lissagaray's History of the Paris Commune. She also championed the programming of art and education in the Socialist League, and finally completed the English translation of the first volume of Capital with Engels, Aveling and others. If this were not sufficient, she and Edward completed and published The Woman Question from a Socialist Point of View. Famously, it took Flaubert a large part of his life to produce Madame Bovary, years of gestation and then 5 years writing. Eleanor had just shy of 6 months to produce her complete translation, and she was unable to devote all her time to it. The character of Emma Bovary haunted Eleanor. Her life is idle, useless, and this strong woman feels there must be something to do, and she dreams. Life is so unreal to her that she marries Bovary thinking she loves him. In all literature, there is perhaps nothing more pathetic than her hopeless efforts to make herself in love. We can only imagine what Olive thought when she read this introduction and reflected on Eleanor's parallel self-delusion about her failing relationship with Edward. Children had become a vexed subject between Eleanor and Edward, as she confided to Olive. Edward didn't feel ready to have children. Eleanor did. Children, Edward reassured her, would happen, like their legal marriage, in the future.
And Tracy Ann Oberman continues reading from Eleanor Marks, A Life by Rachel Holmes at the same time tomorrow. The abridger was Julian Wilkinson and the producer was Elizabeth Allard. After the news, the perfect tapas.
When I first crashed, my big worry was my eyesight was going. I looked up in the sky to see other people and nobody had seen me.
Real life stories and remarkable encounters.
I was just thinking, if I can get rescued by this evening, there's an outside chance that my wife and kids won't get to hear about this and I might still get away with it.
Welcome in the weekend with Saturday Live.
Well, in fact, it's my first blind date today.
And there she is.
For 5 minutes.
I know, I'm being interviewed, yeah.
Is he your type, do you think?
I think he could well be.
Saturday mornings at 9 on BBC Radio 4.